Welcome, everyone. Can you hear me? No, they can't hear me. We're going to adjust the mic. Hopefully, can you hear me now? I feel like that's from a commercial. Can you hear me now? Yeah. Well, good morning. We're going to get started. I'm Laisha Ward, EVP and Chief External Engagement Officer at Target. And I'm going to be your MC for today's session. And I'm really, really thrilled to be here to support the advancement of women leaders from across the state and around the country. And I'm thrilled that we're here with the incredible Dr. Jen Welter. She is a badass. I'm probably not supposed to say that. That's not in my prepared comments. But
we need more of that.
We need more of that. Okay. Well, she's truly incredible. And as I've gotten to know her, I am even more inspired. And I know that you are going to be as well. But before we turn it over to her, just a few comments. Target is incredibly proud to provide each of you in this session with a journal that is a collaboration between our women's apparel brand called A New Day and the nonprofit Vital Voices. The collection is quite extraordinary in that it celebrates the passion, strength, and undeniable power of women. And it was inspired by the real stories of six women. And so I do hope that you'll enjoy these journals. They're on each of your seats. There's a little bit about Vital Voices in the front cover of it. And use them throughout the conference to, you know, capture practical tools, advice, inspiration from today's speakers. And as you're networking with one another, it'll be a place for you to keep some notes as well. We're really proud to sponsor the Pennsylvania Conference for Women because it celebrates women and the leadership roles, quite frankly, that you play every single day. Whether it's at home, in your career, with your family, or in your community, there are so many ways that women are providing leadership. And quite frankly, I think we need your leadership now more than ever. And I'm a strong believer in living a purpose-driven life. It helps us answer the fundamental question, why do I exist? What impact do I want to make at work, with my family, with my friends, on the environment and the broader community that I'm a part of? And when I think about someone who's living a purpose-driven life, I think our keynote speaker, Dr. Jen Welter, is absolutely an example of that. She became the first female coach in the NFL when she joined the Arizona Cardinals as a linebacker coach in the summer of 2015. That experience and the leadership insights she's gleaned through a career of firsts is chronicled in her new book, Play Big, Lessons in Being Limitless from the First Woman to Coach in the NFL. Woo! You can feel free to give it up and say well or girl or amen, whatever you're feeling. Just like, this is family time, so let it all out. Like Jen, I'm guessing some of you have also experienced what it's like to be a first or perhaps the only. I certainly have. Many times throughout my career, I may have been the only woman or the only person of color. Now we're going to hear about her trailblazing journey, and I know you're going to be inspired. And she's then going to come up and share some of her nuggets of wisdom, get us energized. And as time allows, we'll take a few questions from the audience. So I'll instruct you afterwards. We've got a single mic here, and we'll take as many as we can. But we want to leave as much time as possible to hear her story. So please help me in giving it up for Dr. Jen Welter.
Okay, first of all, let me just hold up. I know you guys just had a beautiful morning and you probably had some breakfast and you just must be a little sleepy because there's a lot of people in this room right now. And I need you to start early channeling all that energy. Finding where that energy is, because when you take it here and you feel it today, that is what will carry you through some of those other days. See, in football, we know we're doing a good job when y'all get loud and get a little rowdy. So I'm just gonna pretend like y'all didn't just give me a golf clap. Because that doesn't work in my world. And I'm gonna ask y'all, how y'all doing? Like you are ready to own you, am I right? Did that not feel better? Yes, that felt a lot better. And let me tell you something. One of the things that society has historically done is taken away your voice. Put your head down, do your job, don't say anything. Accept scraps. Be less than. Don't own your voice, and certainly don't congregate. Because let me tell you, when you get together, there just might be some problems. Right? So you have to realize that that energy that you felt when you were just allowed to get loud and get rowdy, that is what you have to take with you into life, into those challenges, to realize that you have the power to own your voice. There are a lot of people who are going to tell you that what you think, what you say, what you feel is crazy. Guess what? I've been told I was crazy my whole career. I love my brand of crazy. And I want you to love yours too. Let me challenge you with a thought. What if everything that somebody told you was wrong about you along the way was exactly what made you right? What if that was actually your power? What if what makes you different is actually what makes you special? Being the first is great, sure. But what it really represents is bringing a new, different, vibrant perspective to a situation that they haven't heard it before. So when you're first, you get to bring a new, fresh perspective into a scenario. And that's where the power is. But if you are that person, what you have to do is own that voice. I remember when I was thinking about going into the NFL, there was nobody I could look at and say, I'm going to coach like her. Because that didn't exist. So then you start to wonder, where do I get this voice? How am I going to coach? How am I going to know what's right or what's wrong? Because there are no rules, right? I'm the one who's leading from the front. And guess what? The responsibility and also the opportunity of being first is to ensure that you are not the last. Because I can tell you what, you are being watched, and all you don't want to do is be the reason why they said it. Well, we tried that once, but, you know, that Jen Welter, we could never let another girl back in here. That's about to be a problem, right? So in those things, it's kind of tempting at times to diminish your voice and to diminish your power, because if you don't stand up too far, if you don't say anything too loud, maybe you won't be a target and they won't knock you back down to size, right? If I'm just not too loud and I don't cause too much of a distraction, then maybe I won't be a target and I can keep this position. But it doesn't change much either, right? I am a woman who is for women, but not at the expense of men. And let me tell you what that means. We have to work together. We have to work together to change things. But that means that you have to own this voice, right? I want you to picture a locked room, because that's what I was going into. It was a vault. There were no windows, only one door. And inside that room, there were only men. So in that situation, a man had to open the door for me. But when you're in there, that's when you ensure you put the foot in the door and you make sure other people can get in as well. I don't care how you got that foot in the door, but when you do, you better kick a whole lot of butt with it. So what do you do when you can't look around and say, I'm going to do it like her? Okay, I mean, I could coach like the guys, but let's picture it. Like, you know, how many of you guys have pictured a football coach? He might be yelling at a guy like face to face. How many of you seen that image? It's been on every sideline. You seen that, huh? Okay, I couldn't do that because first of all, if I was trying to yell like that, it would have been in his belly button. Right? Not only is it ineffective, but it's funny. So thankfully, I was coaching in arena football prior to going to the NFL, and I had a really dear friend of mine. His name's Terry Glenn. If you know Terry Glenn, unfortunately, he passed away this last year. I had people all over the country who were calling and checking if I was all right, because Terry had that big an influence on me. TG was also often misunderstood as a human when he was in the NFL, because he didn't like to say a lot. He didn't really like the media. He wouldn't talk. They thought he was a bad boy, this, that, and the other. Well, guess what? TG had social anxiety disorder. TG should not be the person that you throw up in the cameras and make him do interviews, because he wasn't comfortable. He didn't really like to talk that much. But he loved football. It spoke his language. We couldn't afford TE on that coaching staff, but he loved the game so much, right, that he used to come out and coach him anyway. He used to come out and help those guys because he wanted to see those guys get to the next level. That's how big his heart was. He was one of those guys who didn't say much, but everything he said was like, wow, that was deep. And he looked at me and he said, you know, Jen, I've been thinking a lot about you going to the NFL. And the best advice I can give you is to be 100% authentic. He said, if you are the same exact person that you were with us here every day with those guys in the NFL, they will absolutely love you. But if you're fake in any way, they will sense it and they will eat you alive. No pressure. But I kept those words with me. At every point when I wondered if I should do something, what I should say, how I should coach, how I should act, I went back to be authentic. Because as I looked around, I knew this, and I encourage you that too. And this is not a knock on the guys, because I love them. They're like my big brothers. But I was never going to outman a man at being a man. And frankly, they didn't need more men. They needed me. So I needed to own my voice, and I needed to embrace the fact that it was different, okay? People would always ask me, how did you command the respect of the players in the NFL? And I would go, ooh. Yes, you will listen to me because I'm your coach. And they probably would have looked down and patted me on the head, right? That doesn't work, y'all. It doesn't work to be in a position of power and say you have to listen to me because of a position. What you have to do in a position of power, first and foremost, is to realize that even as a coach, you have to be coached. Yeah. I love it. You have to be coached, because guess what? Every single one of those people that you're supposed to lead is a very unique individual. And they may need something different from you. And if you're not open to those conversations, guess what? You're guessing. But people will give you what you need to lead them. You have to be humble and caring enough to open your heart enough to realize that even a player in the NFL, even somebody who is big and bad and they wear pads and they look like a superhero, is a very real human. And they have very real human things going on. And they're in a very real, tough scenario where everything about them is being quantified, judged, and they are fighting for their lifeline. 90 guys come into preseason and training camp. 53 make the roster. With 7, I believe it is now, to practice squad, that means 1/3 of those men will have been fighting for everything that they have ever wanted in their entire life. And at the end, they'll be told they're not good enough. Everybody is physically capable of doing the job. That's why they're there. Every single one of them has the talent that they need to be successful in the National Football League. So why do some people excel and some don't make it? It's not physical. It's mental. It's heart. It's being willing to make those decisions. And guess what? You, as a leader, have the ability to not only coach someone in what it is they need to do on their job, or on X's and O's, or in my case, tackles and takedowns, but also as a human. And I would argue with you, if you want to truly be able to lead someone, you have to love someone. You have to bring them into your world. And guess what that means? They have to feel like they can approach you. They have to feel like you're human. I remember when I became the first head coach of the Australian women's national team, first woman to be a head coach of a national team in international competition in American football. I was such a good player in my playing days, and I had done so much to be this invincible little being who couldn't be taken down, that when I went to coach this team and tell them things, they would say, "Yeah, but you're Jen Welter." They would whisper my name as if I was more than human. And guess what? If I was perfect, if I was superhero status, if I was more than human, they couldn't live up. So how could I elevate them if they thought I was perfect? Perfect is not approachable. It's really boring. It's inhumane. And guess what? It is maybe a moment in time. It may be a picture in a magazine with a whole lot of Photoshop, but perfect is not human, y'all. For every one of you women who thinks that you have to be perfect every single day, let it go. Life is not pretty, polished, and perfect. And in fact, if you are going to change the game, you are going to get your hands dirty. So as a leader, you have to let everyone you are looking to lead know that you are first and foremost a human. Everybody connects in different ways, right? I made my ladies on the Australian women national team sit down with me and tell me what my kryptonite was. I put my humanity in front of them and I forced them to look at me in a different way because guess what? We all have that kryptonite. But if you know it and you embrace it, I would argue you can use it as a strategic advantage. However, if they thought it did not exist in me, I could not elevate them to the levels of where I knew that they could be. The same thing with my guys. How did I command respect in the NFL? First of all, I didn't. Second of all, I didn't have to. I had an advantage, and for the guys in the room, I see one brave one, and I know we have more. First of all, thank you guys, because I always know that any guy in a room I speak into is a freaking genius. You know why? He wants to know how we think, ladies. So every man who walks into a women's conference, hello, we love you. Because also you can then be one of those allies who opens a door that we couldn't open without you. Right? Part of the reason why I was successful in the NFL was because of a man named Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians, I would argue, should be a hero to all women. I don't care if you don't like football. But Bruce Arians broke the ultimate glass sideline. He bet his entire coaching legacy on me. Because let me tell you what would have happened if something went wrong in Arizona. It wouldn't have mattered how many great things that Bruce Arians had done in the game of football, whether he was two-time coach of the year, offensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers when they win their Super Bowls, or even back here at Temple. Y'all would have said, "Yeah, but you remember that time he lost his mind and hired that girl." And he did that. He did that off the force of his character and the belief that something had to change. And we need more people who are willing to bet their career on somebody else. Would you lay it on the line for somebody else? Would you be the champion? Would you be the hero? Because we all know them. We all have them. We all have those opportunities, big and small, to be the hero. But you have to be willing to be the hero. And let me tell you, they use the term trailblazer all the time. There is not a least favorite word that I have in my vocabulary. You know why? You know what all trailblazer means to me? It means you are the one who takes all of the branches to the face. You are walking through the woods and you're like, "Yeah, well, we're gonna do this." Oh, oh, that branch was unfortunate. Here, let me cut that down here. I'm gonna blaze this trail, right? You're still going. Oh, you cut it down. You keep going, and it's not pretty, it's not polished, it's not perfect. In fact, it's often painful. And it's certainly not glorious, because you're stuck in the middle of the woods. And nobody's seeing that work you're doing back here. They don't see it until finally you come through and you're like, oh. And everybody's like, whoa. And you're like, yes. And that trail, though, is the important part, because the next person walks through and they're like, oh, look, it's a pretty trail. That's what trailblazer means to me, right? But you have to find those people who are willing to do that. And part of the reason why I was successful and didn't have to command the respect from the guys in Arizona was because of the credibility of that man. Because they knew that a man like Bruce Arians hired me, and Bruce Arians does not play. He does not pull punches. He will tell you the truth. And for him to make that decision spoke highly of me, right? So I had that going for me. Number two, they could also check my game tape, and they did. Those guys knew everything about me before I walked in the door. They did their homework. Oh, man, Coach Jen, you were a beast off the edge. You gonna teach me that, Coach? Yeah, I got you, whatever you need, right? So I had the credibility of the person who brought me in the door, boom, which spoke for me. My game tape, my street cred, spoke for itself. And let me tell you one thing that Bruce Arians did also, which I didn't know until I was writing my book. So a lot of people would think about if you were going to make this big change from a corporate scenario or perspective or a leadership perspective, if you said, you know, I want to do this, I want to make this epic move, you would go up, right? He'd go to the GM, go to the owner and say, hey, this is what we need to do as an organization. Bruce didn't. Bruce has a reputation of being a player's coach, and here's part of the reason why. He didn't go up first. He went to his locker room first. He went to the men who are the leaders of his team from a player's perspective, and he got their buy-in first. When those men said, yeah, coach, we're down with that. Absolutely, that's cool. We get to be a part of history, man. We could have the first female coach. I'm with that. Then he brought it upwards. So I never had to command the respect of those players because they helped make the decision to have me there. They had ownership in that decision. So I wasn't fighting an uphill battle. They were fighting for me. And let me tell you part of why those players, and I will fight to the teeth for all of them, is because they knew that we shared the struggle in common. Okay? A lot of those guys overcame really tough things to get to the NFL, right? You'll hear them say, sports changed my life. I went from here to here because I could catch a football or throw one, right? Sports give a lot of guys chances to change their families, right? Not only their own lives, but they take their ability to catch a football to change a community, right? But the way Bruce brought me into the NFL was pretty clever in and of itself. He brought me into the NFL through the Bill Walsh Minority Coaching Fellowship, which was set up for African-American former players who were traditionally underrepresented in the coaching ranks. So he understood what it's like to be a minority. And as my guys would say, man, coach, we thought it was hard for us, right? But for you to get here? Nah, man, that's something special. And so your journey is your journey, and whatever field that happens on may be different. But a lot of the times, it's the fight, it's the struggle, it's the grind that's the same. And for all of you who said, I've been the first many times or I've been the only many times, we all have that in common. The path may be different. Of course it is. The scenes change, but the people don't. And the heart that it takes to do that is special. So for all of you who have done that and for all of you who have helped other people do that, I want you to give yourselves a hand right now. Because I know it, I love it, I feel for you in it, and I appreciate it. And I want you to, if you take something from this, take the courage to own that for yourself, to realize that every path that is blazed opens that trail up for someone else, that they can walk a little freer through it. We don't change it through easy, we change it through hard. And we change it through hard ways, having big conversations. Right? I said collective power makes people nervous because then you can say, you know what? You're not alone. I may not have struggled your struggle, but hey, I had this one time. They say, oh my gosh, that sounds just like me. Because there's nothing scarier in this world than feeling like you're the only one. And let me tell you, I've been the only one with international media coverage. Which means, oh gosh, please don't misstep. Because then not only is it your career, is it your life, but it's every other woman who ever wanted to do anything like you ever again, because you're the potential excuse that they can use to close the door tighter than it's ever been closed. That's scary. The outside world was really scary. The inside world, we were good. In fact, I would argue we were great. Let me tell you something about being the different person. Okay, when you know that you are the odd man or odd woman out, when you are the person who is different, guess what you have the ability to do? You have the ability to set the tone. Okay, because when you walk into that scenario, it is first date awkward. How many of y'all know what first date awkward means? Hello, we've all been on that first date. Man, I'm telling you what, everybody's on such good behavior that you leave and you have no idea who you just spent those hours with. Right? It's like, oh, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Can we hold hands? Is his hand going to be like sticky? Do I let him open the door for me or do I open the door for him? Right? We don't know. And they certainly don't know. And so these guys, I'm telling you what, when I first got in there, they were first date awkward, walking around on eggshells. We don't know. We've never had a girl in here before. What, is she going to like freak out? Can I say that in front of her? Oh my gosh. And let me tell you, you're the person who gets to set the tone on what is okay and what isn't. Okay? And you have an opportunity to do that in a way, and my style is always humor. You know why? Because humor, you can draw some subtle lines in the sand and say that's really not okay. But you also give them a chance to recover if for by some chance it was just a mistake and the brain and the mouth did not connect. Right? Like it was in the brain and sounded like it was going to be okay. Somewhere was lost by the time it got to the mouth. Through humor, you can give yourself an opportunity to see where that line lies. I want y'all to write this down if you're taking this notes. I want you to remember this phrase. This is my fail-safe when I feel that the brain and the mouth have not connected for them. I would look at guys, I'd be like, dude, you do realize you said that out loud, right? Now, why is that powerful? Because why that's powerful is then they can say, if they did not mean it, and this is guys versus women, this is any kind of a situation where you may not have had the cultural exposure to know better. Because that happens all the time. If I haven't lived your life, if I haven't walked in your shoes, I don't know the things that may be personal to you and your culture. Not through malicious intent, but just simply not knowing. And if I'm a good person and you say that to me, I'm going to go, oh my gosh, I didn't know. I'm so sorry. How do I fix it? Like, what would have been better to say? I'm going to look at a place to repair, because if I'm a good human, I did not mean to make you feel bad. So you just gave somebody an opportunity to learn to be better. And you guys just gave each other an opportunity to strengthen your relationship, right? And you also gave yourself a way to know if somebody just had a bad moment or needed to learn, or if they were just a really big jerk. Because if they come back and do it again, you probably know that you're working with a problem. And then you may want to pay attention, and then you may end up needing to escalate a situation. But let's let people be human. Especially in a culture right now where people don't even know how to be around each other, especially with men and women, people are walking on eggshells. We have to give each other permission to be better. And that's one way that we can do it is through humor. If you freak out, you say, I can't believe you said that. That's not okay. That's sexist. That's racist. That's ist, whatever. Guess what does not happen again? Nothing ever happens again. Because you know what they're going to do the next time they see you? Oh, no, that's the bad line. No. And then what's going to happen, too, is that the guy who doesn't really probably understand what he said, which was a lot of mine, but they just know they got yelled at, and this is not the time to be on the wrong side of women. It's not. And if you haven't gotten that memo yet, hello. I would argue it's never a good time to be on the wrong side of women. But in this culture, in this voice, we actually have a voice. So we're telling them it's the wrong time, right? So guys are a little scared, rightfully so, but a little scared. But let me tell you what's going to happen. Not only are they going to U-turn to you now, but the next thing that they're going to do, and you know, say that was me back there, is they're going to see one of their buddies and they're going to be like, uh-uh, not that one. No. Stay away. So you don't have an opportunity to repair the relationships, but through humor, you have power to set a line, set a standard for yourself, and hopefully develop a more cohesive relationship. We did that all the time, right? I'll tell you, one of my favorites was one of my linebackers, and he wasn't mine. He was actually an outside linebacker who, that's what I did, right? That's what I played. So I could set the tone with him, right? And I was coaching him up on something simple, and I was looking at him, coaching him, right? And I said something, and he goes, yes, ma'am. Oh, I'm so sorry. I mean, coach, I mean, doc, I mean, I don't even know. And I just looked up at him, and I said, I will never be mad at you for good home training. You can call me ma'am, you can call me doc, you can call me coach. Just don't call me a B word, okay? And he said, but I would never. And I said, I know, that's why it's funny. Ladies, I challenge you, so many of the things, big and small, that we come into are really about the perspective that we take to them. I did not start playing football with a goal of being in the NFL. In fact, the strength for me to play football throughout my career came from knowing that football was known as the final frontier for women in sports. It was everything that we were not supposed to do. But I really felt if we could win at football, couldn't we change the world? And that's where it came from. I was certainly also never the one that they looked at and said, you'll be one of the best football players in the world one day. At 5'2", 130 pounds, and yes, this is my top height, I was constantly told what I couldn't, shouldn't, and wouldn't do. And thankfully, what I didn't do was let them be right. There are so many things that you're going to come up against, and I could honestly talk to you for hours to give you permission to share my whole story. But really, in this time, what I wanted you to realize is that you have the ability to own you. You cannot control what somebody else does. You cannot control the world outside of you. You can influence them, but you can be the very best you that you are. And you can influence people through what you say, how you roll, and owning your voice. And in this time, we make the impossible possible. We're going to continue to kick glass. Whatever that glass is, we're going to kick it down. And that's every single one of you. But don't feel like that has to be so big that it's not worth celebrating. Breaking barriers happen in your own mind every day. Greatness is not one big act. It is the commitment to moving forward, especially on the days when you feel like you have nothing left. Those are the days that you may not run marathons, but you can still shuffle in slippers. Now, unfortunately, we ran a little late, so we only have a couple of minutes for questions. But does anybody have questions? Yeah, right here.
We need you to, if we can, ask you to get to the mic in the middle.
But do it quick, because I'm getting this.
And if there are a couple of testing. And if there are a couple of others who want to, head to the mic right now.
Yeah, get to the mic.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Is that on?
Yep, it's on.
Okay, it's on.
Great.
All right, thank you so much. Amal Clooney was great, but this is what I came for.
Yeah!
Okay, so I am the first. I pitch a lot. I am out there taking risks a lot, but I find I'm often, you know, there's like egg in my face, or I make a mistake, or it is a room full of men, and I'm pitching. And is there something that you always go back to? Like, do you always push and own your voice and trust yourself, or is there a time where you refine a little bit or work with this scenario?
Okay, like, sometimes you have to be strategically stupid. Okay? And this is a very powerful statement, and I want you to stay with me. Okay? It's like this. I had a woman ask me once, she goes, you know, what do you do if you're in a meeting and a guy says you're tough? And I said, I smile and I say, thank you. And she goes, but yeah, well, what if you know that the guy is saying tough as an insult? And I say, oh, then I smile and say, thank you so much. Because what he's not going to do is come back and say, excuse me, I'm sorry, actually, that was an insult. Right? So you have to know that some things are worth talking through. Right? Like, that is worth, and you have to know the egos in the room, too. Right? And you that's when I say you have to be coachable. Let the situation coach you. Right? I had guys in Arizona, some of the most powerful connection points that we had nothing to do with their playbooks. It would be something like, Coach Jen, you have a minute? Yeah, what's up? Yo, Coach, my wife is so mad at me. And I don't even know what I did. And I would say, I am an expert in male-to-female translation. Let's talk. But then what do you also know? That player is willing to ask for help. He is somebody who puts his wife first. He was probably raised by a woman. So you now know things about the relationship. So sometimes realize that you can't always be front forward. Know what people are going to use against you and use that as a strategic advantage. And always, always, always let the situation coach you, even and especially when you're in a position as a coach or a leader. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. Thank you both so much.
You're welcome.
Perfect.
Next question.
Come on.
Hi, Dr. Welter. Thank you so much for being here. You're a huge inspiration to me. I actually work for the NFL, so it's really great to see someone who...
Tell them I said hi.
...had cleared the path for me, and you are a huge role model, so thank you very much. I am wondering what you do to combat people who doubt you. I know I've experienced it myself, so, you know, if someone makes a comment that they don't even really mean sometimes, but, like, how do you just take that head on?
Humor.
Okay.
Right, just like I said, right? First is humor, right? Let them know. You can't always say, you can't say that to me, right? Because then, like I said, you may create more friction than you do solutions or relationship. But, like, there are ways to be like, wow, like, that was English. Or do you even realize, like, what that sounded like outside of your mind, right? And again, like, most people, and especially guys and very manly guys, are used to locker room talk. Sometimes what you think is an insult from them is actually a compliment. Do you guys remember going back to the playbook playground when they used to pull your pigtails if the guy liked you? Okay, guys still do that. They test, right, they do. That did not go away. And I would actually argue when they will revert to their 10-year-old selves, i.e. they'll fart in front of you, you're winning, right? You're one of the boys. I know it sounds crazy, but I've seen it play out over and over again. So some of the situations, especially with the guys, I want you to think of it as a personal challenge and a test to see if you can roll hard. Because if you don't get, if they don't get to you, they're gonna be like, all right, she might be all right, right? Because guys will literally, they have a short memory, okay? They do. In certain situations, they really do. And like, they will literally get into a fist fight, right? And then later that night, they'll be having beers and I'll use my water and I'll be like, dang, dog, you really got me with that right hook. Can you teach me how to do that? And I'll be like, oh yeah, we'll go to the gym tomorrow, right? The long psychology of women where we will remember that right hook at a reunion 20 years later is not the way that guys roll. So in that situation, especially knowing the situation that you are in, I want you to use the ability to, one, use humor because they're used to it, right? That's how they go at each other in the locker room. And guess what? They don't mess with guys that they don't like. They just don't talk to them. True?
True.
Right? They will mess with the people that they like. So you may be getting more pushback than you know because they actually think you're closer to them than you really are. So I want you to give it back to them like they give you, right? And just really use some humor. And if something offends you, don't confront it in a big scenario, right? Do a pull aside, right? Like, hey, I know you probably don't know this, but that just kind of wasn't okay to me, and how can we fix this? And they'll probably be like, what? They may not even know. And that's a lot of the times also where you find the difference between someone with malicious intent and disconnect between brain and mouth. And that's always what you want to get to.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hi. I have two comments.
Can you speak into the mic? Thank you.
Yeah, bring it down to your level, baby. It's set. It's just random up there. I wouldn't be able to get all the way up there either. It's fine.
I have two comments that you can comment back if you want. One is that I think you should play Janis Joplin in a movie.
Yes, it's this voice, right?
Okay, and two, as a mental health therapist, your presentation was the perfect manual on how to be a wonderful mother.
Ooh. I just kind of want to like hug you. That's like my comment back. I just think that there's so much, we women, like especially the ones who do it well, ladies, we take it to heart. Okay, the good, the bad, the ugly, like it will be our rise and our fall. I am all heart at 5'2", 130 pounds, in case you haven't known, right? In case you didn't notice. But that heart can also get in our way, right? Let your heart be your strength and your asset, but don't let it define your liability, okay? Don't let your empathy and what you would do and how you would treat people and the shoes that you would walk in set a standard that other people don't know how to obtain. I get that a lot, right? I've given a lot, and sometimes I think, how could they do that to me? And the truth is, it doesn't have anything to do with me, right? It has to do with them, okay?
So we are probably only gonna have time for one more question. So
I'm gonna try and be really fast, let's go.
So one more.
Hi, I am Victoria, and I am from Boothland, Pennsylvania. And so I actually struggle with mental illness, and I'm proud of it. I use it as my strength instead of my weakness. And you're defined simply by being a woman. And I get defined simply because my brain doesn't work like other people. And my entire corporation didn't even know that till today. And so how do you use what seems as your obstacle as your power to move forward? My brain tells me I can't do it, but my heart's trying to tell it I can. So how do you communicate that when you've got your guys on the field who they probably struggle from mental illness and that's their weakness, but they can't even share it with other people?
I think that goes to, especially like if you talk about my guys on the field, it goes to relationship. And, you know, for guys, like, you know, one of the things I was always very conscious of is that I was not ever going to, for example, call them out or yell at them, like, in a way that could cause a confrontation. Because as you all know, like, if that would have happened and he would have yelled back, he would have been branded as not dealing with women, even if it was my fault, right? So my approach was always, like, a pull aside. Like, as I said, I couldn't yell loud enough to make them have to whisper or to listen, but any one of them could lean down for a whisper. So the way I kept communication without conflict was just simply that interpersonal one-on-one. And I think especially when you're talking about the trust for opening yourself up to something that others may not know how to deal with, that comes from that one-on-one relationship of trust and rapport and knowing that, you know, I'm not going to make fun of you for that and I'm not going to put you on blast. I'm going to try and gain understanding from your perspective. Like, what does that look like? You know, and what I would say is, first of all, and I think this would come from everybody in this room, thank you for being brave. That's not an easy thing to say, but every time you say it, it gives somebody else permission to be okay and to even feel empowered by what they're struggling with. And that goes beyond mental illness, right? So you did a brave thing. As you said, your company didn't even know. I bet now they're looking and they're thinking, oh my gosh, number one, I wish I'd have known. I would have loved to help her, and maybe now I can, right? But it also makes them think about those areas in their own life where they were so close to somebody and didn't know. So I really think on any of those positions when you're dealing with particularly sensitive situations, right, the best solution is to really, number one, love enough to care. Number two, ask. Number three, pay attention. And number four, do the best that you can to be better in a situation you may not be used to, but allow for that give and take. And that requires both people to realize that though I want to know you, right, and I want to understand, say, your journey and what you've struggled with, I'm not going to be perfect, right, because I've only been educated recently, but please know that if I get out of line, check me just like I would you.
Thank you.
So, yeah. Thank you. Thank you again. And as we close, on behalf of the entire Target team, including the members of the Target team who are here with me today, ladies, shout out.
Yeah.
Thank you, and let's thank, once again, Dr. Jen Welter. Woo!
And make sure you get my book.
So Dr. Jen Welter will be signing her book later this afternoon. So if you're interested, she'll be selling and signing her book later this afternoon. Please check it out.